This Saturday, if you can make it, we have finished up inventory, and I may read the last page of that chapter, I don't know, that we had from Carry This Message. We spent 4 weeks on that, and I thought it was good. People told me they really got a lot out of it. On how you take inventory, we're going to look at 6 and 7, and those are the steps that change us. They're not discussed much at meetings. They may be misunderstood, but we're going to spend quite a few weeks on it, and we're going to do the Carry This Message, and we're going to do some of the 12 and 12 and some of the Drop the Rock book. So if you can join us Saturday. Let me think. Sunday, we finished Acceptance is the Answer, didn't we? And so we're going to start the book over on Sunday night at 6. We'll do the cover. We'll do the first page. And look at it, and then look at some of the history of the book and the forewords and plow through. So I think that'll be our 10th or 11th time. I can't keep it straight. And so join us on Sunday night at 6. Anything else? So in the big book, these three meetings, on Sunday night we finished. On Saturdays, we're on step 6, page 76, I think. 75 and 76. And on Wednesday nights, we're in We Agnostics, we're in chapter 4. And I don't think we're going to finish the chapter tonight. I'm going to spend some time on just 3 pages, which have so much information in it, and I saw so much new information today. And if you can get on XA Speakers and listen to Father Bill W. from 1981, his story is so powerful. And he talks about, he was a priest in the Vatican. He was from Ireland. He ended up in California. And he tells his story, and he talks about this chapter and how it relates. And if you have time to get that, Father Bill, I think he's passed away now. We got to on page 53, and I'm going to review. So be sure to tell Jimmy to have reviewed. And but not much. Tell him I didn't do much, because he told me Sunday you'll probably review. I'm going to read this powerful paragraph, which we call the second step proposition, or the second step question. And he ties this to the following 3 pages. It's amazing how it's all tied together. And I've done this quite a few times, but I saw so much more today. I don't know why. It says, when we became alcoholics, this is the past tense, when did you become an alcoholic? It's when you're crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade. And I was thinking of the prodigal son. He left home, took his inheritance, dumped dad, had riotous living, and ended up in the pig pen. He was a Jewish guy in the pig pen in Egypt or someplace. And one day he woke up and he said, I'm in the pig pen. And he told somebody that, and they said, well, you've been there a long time. But there was that one day that he could see it. And then he decided that he wanted to go back to dad, which is what we do. We see we're in the pig pen and we want to go back to God. And God ran towards him as he was turning. Powerful stuff. So when I had this crisis, I could not postpone or evade. I could see it. And I had to fearlessly face the question that either God is everything or else he is nothing. There's no middle road. There's no third door to this. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? And this is really the only choice I make all day long. And I think you said that on your birthday. You pray every morning, right? You seek God. The only choice I make, and if I choose God is everything, then my days go well. If I choose to be God everything and I'm everything, things don't go well. And I could be everything at 10, and then God is everything at 11. So it doesn't have to stay anyway. It doesn't have to stay bad. And he says, so this is the question. So he says, arrived at this point, you're crushed by a self-imposed crisis, right? And you have to have the question, either God is everything or he's nothing. So now, I hadn't seen it before, but the next four or five paragraphs answer that question. He's going to prove to us that God is everything and that we were living as if he wasn't. So he says, arrived at this point, I'm at this point, I'm squarely confronted with the question of faith. Do I have faith that God is everything or nothing, right? And he says, we can't duck the issue because there's no third door. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason. So we come in here and we have reason. Anybody have reason when they come in here? We're very smart people. We thought it out, right? We all have a plan and we all have, you know, we all understand why we're here and it has nothing to do with us, right? And we walk over the bridge of reason towards a desired sure faith. So there's a bridge that we're building when you come in here, and are you going to walk across this bridge? And it says, the outlines and the promise of the new land had brought luster to tired eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. So as you're crossing this bridge, it's looking really good. You see hope. You see people. People are reaching their friendly hands to welcome you. Come on, come on. Get moving, get your ass in gear. And it says, we were grateful that reason, notice R, reason with an R. Because, you see, we made God our reason. Reason our God. Does that make sense? And it says it brought us so far, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Isn't that why alcoholics don't make it? They can't give up on their reasoning. They can't give up that their life is unmanageable by them. Now, they won't tell you that. They'll have a million reasons, but that's really what it is. And it's perhaps we were leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. And I wrote, you can't get the deal. You can't get faith if you hold on to your thinking. Because remember, it's the thinking was the cause of our problems. As I say, alcoholism centers in the mind. So, and it says, and I also wrote, if I rely on reason with a capital R, that's not a power that I can live on. See, I need a power to live, right? That's what it says early in this chapter, and it can't be me. And they suggest that it's God. And so it says that's natural, but let's think about this, okay? You can't cross over from the bridge of reason to the shore of faith. And he says, without knowing it, had we not brought to where we stood, there's where Lal is the shore of faith, and I'm standing here with the bridge of reason. Why can't I go 20 feet? And it says, but had without knowing it, hadn't I been brought to where I stood by a certain kind of faith? I had faith to get here, but here's the problem. For did not I believe in my own reasoning? You see, I had faith in me and my thinking, and that was a mistake because my thinking was not, I would believe lies. I would believe things that aren't true. Anybody have fear when they come in here? Anybody have anger? Well, my fears were wrong belief and my anger was wrong judgment, but I believed it, right? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? Anybody confidence in their ability to think? Remember, it says we have to let go of our old ideas absolutely, right? Or the result's nil. And our old ideas were our reasoning, what we reasoned. Does this make sense? So he says, was that not a sort of, anybody have confidence in our ability to think? What was that but a sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful, and listen to this, abjectly faithful to the God of reason. Know that a capital G and the capital R. I hadn't seen this before. I was faithful to my reasoning. And I had this person in my brain telling me things, and I believed them. Anybody else have that? And I still have that person today, but I tell him to shut up. Actually, what I do is I do this thing I heard from this famous speaker. He says, when my thinker talks to me, I ask them what's their source of information. Now think about it. And what you're doing is you're saying, you know, none of this is really true. And so in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time, but it was the wrong faith. Page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness was the root of my problem. My faith was in me. And it found, we found too that I'd been worshipers. I had faith in me and I'd been worshiping. And what a state of mental goose flesh. I wrote with goose flesh. Where did I write that down? I can't remember. I looked it up. That it used to bring on. Had we not variously, anybody worship people? Make them your higher power? How'd that work? Sentiment. Stu mentioned that the other day. Things. Anybody worship things? Money and yourself. And you know what? I did it without even realizing it. Bill W. said it in his story. The drive for success was on. And then he said later, I had arrived. And guess what? He's drunk. And his life goes to crap from that point on. And so I lived my whole life, and we're going to get to that on page 62. It says, I had the delusion, 61, I had the delusion that I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of life. That sounds good, right? If I could manage well. That was a delusion, and I believed it. What that means is if I manage the world, everything out there, I'll feel okay. Anybody try that? It would work for an hour, maybe a week. But then you'll find something to worry about, something that isn't right, or you'll lose it. People will threaten it. And then he says, and so I worship the wrong things. And then with a better motive, had I not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or flower? Who of us have not loved something or somebody? How much do these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? So he's giving you, he's starting to question your ability of reason, because you can't reason why you love something or not. And so he says, little or nothing we saw at last. And it says, were not these things the tissue out of which my life was constructed? Think about that. The tissue of my life was these things I was worshiping, people, sentiment, things, money, myself. That's the life I constructed. And remember, that's the tapestry that they talk about when we talk about fear, that we have a tapestry on the wall and we wove rust through it. And we caught, that was fear. Woven through the tapestry of our lives was this rusty thread, the fabric of my existence, and it was fear. And so, did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of my existence? So when you get here, you don't realize it, but you came here and your life was a mess because you'd been worshiping people, sentiment, money, and things, and yourself. Remember, we may not be much, but we're all we think about. And unfortunately, we're all narcissists. We're insecure with a superiority complex. And we don't like criticism. Anybody else have that? And we believe everything we think. Didn't work well for me. And we're not cured yet, but we can laugh about it now. You see? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith, love, or worship because we'd worshiped all these things, right? And we had faith in ourselves. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. Now, is that not a powerful paragraph in the way it ties it together? So is God or everything or nothing? We made God nothing. We made everything else God. And based on our reasoning. So, and we didn't even know that, right? So imagine life without faith. Were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life. Anybody believe in life? We're all alive, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Of course we did. We could not prove life in the sense that you can prove a straight line in the shortest distance between two points, yet there it was. And then he talked about that bridge being a mass of electrons and steel. We can still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing. How'd that happen? Meaning nothing, whirling on to a destiny of nothingness. Of course we could. It doesn't make sense. So if we look at our reason, we can't reason things that don't make sense. So we don't understand. There's some things we just don't know. The electrons themselves seem more intelligent than that. And hence we saw that reason isn't everything. And I can't depend on my reason unless it's God-centered. So if I believe something today and I'm disturbed, it's because my reasoning isn't God-centered. Now we have a line that when I first heard it, I thought it was really bad and it kind of pissed me off. somebody said to me, now we have the spiritual axiom, Michael, that whenever you're disturbed, there's something wrong with you. Hello? No, you're wrong, but it's true. You see, I'm disturbed, and I'm disturbed if I'm looking at it with my reasoning, my thinking. I'm going to be disturbed. But if I look at it through God's eyes, I'm not disturbed. Now, I couldn't see that. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. Why? Because I wrote, reason depends on the information I have, and I may not have the right information, right? Isn't that what happens when we look at our resentments? We see new information. We see them differently, and they change. And it says, what about people who prove that man can never fly? So I wrote, is my thinking dependable? Can I rely on it? Remember, it says we don't have reliance on people. We rely on God. And I don't rely on my reasoning anymore, right? I have to rely on God. Now, I wish I could get that through to new people, because they fight everything, and they give reasons why. And I said, change your mind, and they look at me like, hello. You know, I got to get rid of him. I get fired a lot. I'm not proud of it, but it's the way it is. You ask people to do something, and they don't reason that they need to do it, and they don't want to do it. And so they blame you for making them do something that they reason tells them they shouldn't do, but they really know that they probably need to do it. I think that made sense. Yet we've been seeing another kind of flight. You see, we proved that man can never fly, but here's another flight, and this is so powerful, I didn't see this before. We had a flight, we had a spiritual liberation from this world. We can see it. People who rose above their problems. I can see it today, I can see it in you. From a year ago, I could see it in Stu and John and Lyle and Robert and Dewey. And if I didn't say your name, don't get a resentment. But you see, we could see it. In AA, you can't deny it. Because if you took a video of me on my last day and played it, and then you'd see me now, you'd say, wow, how'd that happen, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody want to see a video of their last day? No. But we don't want to forget what it was like, right? Don't ever forget it. But we don't want people to see it. We don't need to put it on TV. They said, God made these things possible, and we only smiled because our reasoning said, well, you know, they're full of crap, right? But we had seen spiritual release, but like to tell ourselves it wasn't true. You see, we don't want to believe it. We don't want to believe that we have to do something to get rid of our reason to get a new director, right? Because remember, we're in step two now. We haven't made the decision in step three to play God. So do you see where we're coming from? And then here's the three paragraphs. I mean, they're just so powerful. And I think all people would benefit from understanding this. Because actually, I was fooling myself. My reasoning was fooling me. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And it says on page 45 in this chapter, we had to find a power to live, right? And it can't be me. Obviously, right? And it can't be me. It has to be a power greater than me. So it says, where and how do we find the power? Isn't that a good question? And it says, this book is going to answer those questions. So now they're going to tell us where God is. Now, this is very complicated. See if you figure it out. It's inside of you. The fundamental idea of God is inside of you. And that's good because it's there. So what do we have to do? We have to unblock the power of God by getting rid of this, my reasoning. Now, here's what I did. I don't know about you, but I obscured this idea. I may have believed in God and thought that God's down in there, but, you know, I've got it, God. Corey likes to say that, right? I've got this. And I obscured it by calamity, by pomp. Pomp is ostentatious worship or vanity, by worship of other things. So I put other things that I worshiped, and we just talked about them right on the other page. So you see how page 54 ties into that? So I obscured God with my reasoning by worshiping other things. Good job, Michael. And you know what? I can do it today, but I can see it today. And remember, this book is written for people who are new. They don't see it yet. And you're reading these pages. But you see, if you read it by yourself, it's hard. That's why I started this meeting. If you can have somebody read it and kind of go through it, you can see it. There's a pattern. It's taken me years to see it. I've been doing this 1,500 of these meetings. But in some form or other, it is there. It's always there. Remember on page, you do the third step prayer, and you make the decision. Say, this is great, but it's not going to do anything unless you face and be rid of the things blocking you from the power inside of you. See how it all ties together? So step three is where you're deciding that you're going to let this power work in your life. And remember, the chapter is called We Agnostics, those without knowledge of God. How could I have a knowledge of God when I block God in? I had no relationship with him. I had no knowledge of his will for me. I had knowledge of my will, my reasoning. And it says, for faith in a power greater than ourselves, a miraculous demonstration of that power in human lives are fact as old as man himself. And guess what is the greatest demonstration that we have in this room of the miraculous power in human lives? This book. This book was their testimony of people, 100 men and women who were hopeless. And this is their testimony of what happened to them. Remember what it was like, what happened, and what we're like now. And you can't argue with the book. You may not like it. You may not. Your reasoning may tell you don't need it, it doesn't apply to you, well, fine. But it's their testimony. It's like the New Testament. You don't have to believe it, you don't have to like it, but it's their testimony. And I know it's true. The reason I know this testimony is true is because I've done this and I know my testimony is true. And they say later in the book that the great fact is that we have a relationship with a power greater than ourselves, and that power has changed our attitudes and our outlook on life and the way we see and live. So here it is. We finally saw, finally, you're dying, right? You're fighting everything. You finally saw that faith in some kind of God was part of your makeup. Now, you may not know this, but when you finish steps 4 through 9 and you're in step 10 in the world of the Spirit, you know this. And you know that the faith is part of your makeup. God's there and you have a relationship. And that's the spiritual experience. How are you going to get the relationship with this faith of power versus your faith of reason? You work the steps. Just as much as a feeling we have for a friend. So the God inside of me is like my friend, but I call him Father. I like that. I say Father. I pray Heavenly Father, but I know the Heavenly Father is inside of me. And it says, sometimes we had to search fearlessly. Does that sound like a step? Mm-hmm. What about step 4? And it says we're going to face and be rid of the things blocking us. So I'm going to search fearlessly. And when I finish step 4, I find he was there. Not he is there. He was there the whole time. And I hadn't seen that before. It doesn't say he is there. He was there. God was there, but I created Michael, and I had my character defects, and I had anger and fear, and I harmed people, and I made bad decisions. Anybody else have that? Mm-hmm. It's not pretty, but it made me realize that I could forgive myself now because I wasn't a bad person. I had the wrong director, me. And I wasn't bad. I just relied on me and my reason, and I wanted the rest, satisfaction, happiest life, and all I needed to do was let God do it. And I would have made so many better decisions. I wish I'd found this program when I was 5 years old. I started out 15 would have been good. And then I said, what about 10 and 5? 5 was when I started getting these screwy ideas that, you know, I wasn't good enough and I had to make mother love me and all this other nonsense. I don't know if it's nonsense, but did anybody start that when they were little? See, my alcoholism started long before I took the first drink. People don't realize it. My alcoholism started when I was sober, and alcohol became a solution. I said, wow, I'm okay. I'm not that bad. World looks great. Anybody else say that? Get a few drugs, world looks great. Things are good. Why? We're treating our alcoholism. But it stopped working, didn't it? So it says, he was there. What a great line. He was as much a fact as we were. Now, I've heard Joe and Charlie say, are you sitting here? Does everybody know you're sitting here? All right, Stu's here, I know, I can feel him. He's a fact. this as much as the fact that Stu's sitting here is the fact that God's here in me. And it says, here's the great line, we found the great reality. Notice G-R, great reality. What a great term for God. We talk about truth, I am the way and the truth and the life, right? And so the truth is the great reality. And I created my reality, which was not a capital G and a capital R. And I have to realize that the great reality is deep down within me. What a great way of telling us this. And it says in the last analysis, when I peel everything away, when Michelangelo took that block of stone and he peeled everything away, he had the David. And this Father Bill said he came in here and he was like a two-year-old with a dirty diaper and he was a mess and he stunk and he hadn't bathed. And as he peeled all that away, there was this beautiful little baby. Think about that. And God does that for us. In the last analysis, it's only there that he may be found. It's so with us. And then once you've found this, you seek him all day long. Right, John? We pause when agitated or doubtful and we ask the great reality, what do I do? And we don't ask ourselves, we ask him. And I wrote, there's no barrier to the relationship. The only barrier is my reasoning in me. And we all have it. We're all self-centered. So we all get this all day long. But steps 10 and 11 is how we watch with God for the separation so we can get back to conscious contact. Remember, we only have one problem in our alcoholism. We consciously separate from God. He's here. I make a conscious decision to live on me and my reasoning. And there's only one solution, conscious awareness of God inside and contact with him. So all day long, we're off the beam. And in 10 and 11, we're correcting all day long so we stay on the beam with God. And then at night, remember it says, we look back at the day, where were we selfish, dishonest, resentful, afraid? Where was I losing contact with God? And then did I take the corrective measures? What did I do? See how it works? So now we don't have to live like the way we did. We have a power inside of us and we have the tools of the steps. So there, I hear people say, I don't work the steps. Well, they can't possibly have what I have. Because if I don't work the steps, I'm back in the God of reason here, and I'm living Michael Ruddy the world, and it turns to crap really quickly. You know how you know when your life's turning to crap? Now, this is very complicated. You don't feel good. You're anxious. You're worried. You're pissed off. You're bothered. They're doing this to me again. Oh, I'm not going to get what I want. Oh, we can go on and on. All right. Now, now they end with this. We can only clear the ground a bit. Now, see how it ties together. If our testimony, you see, this is their testimony. This is the miraculous demonstration that happened in their life. This is their testimony. This is what they found. The great reality was deep down in us. In the last analysis, he's there. And if this testimony, so this book is a testament. And we have the Good News Bible, right? Isn't that right? And this is called the Great News Book. This is the great news for people who want to live the good news, right? I made that up. It sounds good. It makes sense, though, doesn't it? This is great news for us because I couldn't follow the good news because I lived on my reasoning. And it says, sweeps away prejudice. Sweep it away. It doesn't say, well, you may want to change your mind. Sweep it away. Prejudice is prejudgment. Enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently where? Within yourself. Now, when we came in here, we searched out there. If they would just change, if this one would do this, we searched out there to fix the world, right? Inside, we search here to fix us. Remember, we read it's an inside job, and that world becomes okay. We don't change that world. It is what it is, right? But we change the way we react to it. Then, and here's three words I hadn't seen before, if you wish. So it's still got to be up to me. Do I wish to join them on the broad highway? Notice the capital B, the capital H. Now, on the next three pages, it's going to say, thoroughly follow the path, the broad highway. So do you want to go down that broad highway thoroughly? Well, sweep away your prejudice, think honestly, and search diligently, and you'll go down the highway. With this attitude, this is the attitude that we need. You cannot fail. Now, they don't mince words here, do they? If you sweep away your prejudice, think honestly, search diligently, and within yourself. And if you wish, you can join them on the broad highway. It's just up to you. With this attitude, you cannot fail. So why do people fail? They don't sweep away prejudice. They don't give up on their reasoning. They don't want to think honestly about their situation. And they don't want to search diligently within themselves. They want to search diligently within you. And they don't join the broad highway. And then they say, AA doesn't work. Have you ever heard that? AA doesn't work. Well, if you do this, it's going to work. And this isn't meetings. This isn't fellowship. This is the steps. This is the seeking of God. And then here's the powerful promise. The consciousness, look at this, the consciousness of your belief. You start out with belief. We've talked about it before. And your belief becomes conscious. It's faith. You're aware that there's a power within you. We start out with believing, right? But when we do the deal, we have awareness of the belief is true and it's inside of me and it's God. It's sure to come to you. So faith is, in AA, is consciousness of your belief. We start out belief, but we're not conscious of it yet. Why? Because we're asleep. We're spiritually asleep to the power. But we come awake to the power and then our belief. And that's why when I have a problem today, or John or Stu, we go to God because we know it's true and he's there inside of us. And I'm aware of my belief as faith. And if I go to God and do the prayers and do the things I'm taught, things will be fine. So, I don't know. I just think these are so powerful. So, I'm going to close it with that. I hope people can comment on some of this and how they see this and they've used this information in their life. So, all right. Thank you.